So there's never a good time to fire somebody, but there sure is heck better time to do it than find a veteran on Memorial Day at Dairy Queen. Hey everybody, welcome back to Building Wealth with Dr. Wheeler Pulliam. I am Dr. Wheeler Pulliam. It's come to my attention recently that most people don't understand that I am an entrepreneur. So let me get that out of the way. Yes, I am an entrepreneur. And that's why I'm excited to come to you guys today and talk about some good stuff as far as what entrepreneurship means versus a side hustle. What are some pros? What are some cons? I mean, we got a lot of great content today, almost too much, I think. But I'm gonna just throw it up on you. It's gonna be kind of like taking a drink of water from a fire hose. So get ready, buckle in, strap in, get your notepad out, and let's get started. So why entrepreneurship, right? Everybody wants to ask it. I mean, we see in today's times, especially in before the current, downturn of the economy, or even probably more so because of the downturn in the economy, that people are probably turning more towards, you know, what it was like to be self-employed, let's say. So let's explore that. And then the other side is, you know, maybe you don't want to go the full range into, entrepreneurship, like, starting your own business from scratch. Maybe it's you want to just dip your toe in the water, right? What we call a side hustle. So let's look at what those two things look like, right? So first of all, let's just envision us jumping right into the deep end of the pool and going, you know what? I want to start my own business. But why would I do that, Wheeler, when there's so many other places maybe I can go get a job? Well, first of all, I think you got probably see here coming up, the economy's probably going to start to tighten up. And so for all you cool cats out there who are like, hey, I've got 4 or 5 job offers, I can work from home, I can demand all of this stuff from my employer because they're lucky to have me, I think you're probably going to see that change. I think you're probably going to see the talent pool tighten up. I think you're going to see employers probably be more selective with who they hire and probably have more options. So I hate to say it, but for some of you boys and girls out there, you're probably going to be forced into self-employment. So even if you're not thinking about that, even if you're not, you know, wanting to go out there and do your own thing, I'm saying here today it may be forced upon you. So it couldn't hurt to take a listen. So let's look at the pros and cons, right? You always do a sheet, right? My mom always used to tell me, look, if you're trying to make a decision, write down on one half the pros and on the other half the cons. So let's just kind of walk through that with entrepreneurship or being your own, you know, having your own business. So the first thing is, right, let's just get out of the way. You're your own boss. You're the man, the woman, however you want to say it. You're the person. You call the shots. That's the number one thing, I think, when you talk to most people who start their own business. That's it. You know, they probably have a story where they're, you know, have a boss that was just unbearable and they wanted to get out from under their thumb. Or if you've ever said this to yourself, if you ever said at your desk or out in the field where you work, whatever, hey, if I was in charge, I would do this or I would do it this way. Then you have an entrepreneur mindset. I mean, and that's what leads most people to take that jump. For those that know me, that know that I've probably had even since my Army days, I probably had a problem with authority. That's probably been just about every review I had. Hey, I've had that, you know, I'm a great performer, top performer, that type of stuff, most of the time anyway. But always a little blurb in there about, you know, has trouble following direction from those over him. Couple stories come to mind. I remember we had this this one was at General Electric, and I'll change the names to protect the innocent, I guess, but let's just call him Tim Hossert. So Tim had come over to manage the division of GE that I was a part of from China, and I'll just be frank, Tim didn't know anything about the division he was in. This is notorious GE stuff, moving the chess pieces around, and I had a hard time following him, let's say. If you don't know what you're doing, and it's apparent you don't know what you're doing, very hard for me to fake following someone who doesn't know what they're doing. I don't know if that even comes from the Army infantry days or not. If you're in the Army and you're following somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, you ain't following them for long. Let's put it that way. So anyway, my boss who reported to Tim said, hey, we're doing this golf event out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Tim needs to get to know you, what a great guy you are and all that stuff. And, you know, you guys kind of have to mend the fences or whatever. And I said, okay. And I wasn't married at the time. And he said, hey, they're bringing wives and families together, our largest clients, customers, and, you know, bring your girlfriend out. I know your girlfriend, and she plays golf, and she'd be good to be out there too. So we did. And things are going okay, and we go to tee off for golf. Now, again, here we come back to not knowing what you're doing. Tim decides to tee off and lead the way. We had rented out, General Electric had rented out the entire Hilton golf course, and he's teeing off on T1, right? Turns out Tim clearly has not played golf ever before in his life before that day. I think maybe he went to the range a day or two before, and he decides now is his day. And instead of, you know, picking up the ball or going with the pace, he is trying to genuinely play golf for the first time in his life at a client event. And if anybody's ever out there in business knows or has heard, there's a thing called playing client golf, which means you ain't out there for you, brother. You out there for the client. You're out there to make the client feel good. Because if they ain't having a good time, guess what they're not going to do? They're not going to do business with you. So I had a buddy who was in that group, and he's texting me, and this is in the early days of flip phone text. And he's texting me, oh my goodness, are you watching this? Can you see this? And it was just miserable. I mean, I think we, after an hour and a half, we were on hole three. And for those non-golfers out there, typically you want to play a hole of golf in about 15 to 20 minutes, you know, at the most 25. But here we are, an hour and a half in on hole three, and we're going towards maybe an eight-hour round of golf. And again, a normal round of golf is around five hours maybe. Here in Dallas, maybe a little longer. But the group I was with was complaining, their clients, and I was probably a 6 handicap at the time, so I was pretty confident, you know, pretty cocky, I guess. And I said, hey, let me liven this up. Hey, watch this. I remember I teed off the ball. My boss is in the fairway, or boss's boss, rather, in the fairway, which was an anomaly for him, taking forever to swing. And I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, hey, watch this. And with all seriousness, she looks at me, shakes her head. No, don't do it. Please don't do it, Wheeler. And of course, the clients are kind of looking, egging me on. I hit the drive, and I could probably make it rain out there at this point. I put it on the left side of the fairway, and it rolled by. Some of you people out there are thinking, well, that's dangerous, Wheeler. You could have hit him. Yeah, that's the point, right? So anyway, ball rolls by him. He turns around, looks. He's not happy about it. Go to the next hole, right? I do it again on the next hole. I put in a sand trap by him. Then I'd yell four every time. So for those safety conscious, I did yell four when I hit the ball. He's not happy. I'm getting these texts blown up from my buddy. Oh, my God, please stop. He's so mad. Please stop what you're doing. It's uncomfortable. My girlfriend's uncomfortable. The people I'm with, they're laughing. I'm having a great time. We finish the round. Again, this is my boss's boss. I sit down next to this gentleman who was there with his wife, who was the client. I said, hey, how was your round? He goes, hey, listen, man, I don't know who you are. And I don't know who he is, pointing to Tim, my boss's boss. He goes, all I know is that he, Tim, cannot stand you. And my buddy came over at the time and said, yeah, man, I know you're killing me. He goes, that one time when you yelled four, Tim was in the back, was in his backswing, and he hit the ball. It went 10 feet straight up in the air, landed 5 feet in front of him. He turned around to us with his golf club and yelled out, you know, eventually Wheeler's just going to effing turn into Wheeler, right? So there I had that going for me. We finished the weekend. Tim, again, tiny guy he was, never came up to me, never said he had a problem. He just held on to it. It was time for my review a week later, and my boss at the time called me up. He goes, hey, I got good news and bad news. I said, what? Good news is I'm getting my raise, right, because I'm the top performer in the company. He goes, yeah. And I said, let me guess what the bad news is. Jim Gossett wants to fire me. He goes, well, did you have to hit him to me so many times, right? So, of course, couldn't fire me. I'm still producing for them. But anyway, my point to that whole story is bosses suck. And I'm looking at you. If you're a boss, part of you sucks too. Doesn't matter how great a boss you are, how bad a boss, or how much stuff you do. Somewhere there's an employee that hates what you do. Now, that's the downside of being a boss. But the upside of being the boss is who cares? Who cares? If you're making money and you're calling the shots, you never have to go through a scenario like that again. You never have to worry about getting a phone call about, hey, we're having to make a tough decision at the company. That tough decision means firing you, right, for layoffs. I remember another story. I remember, again, it was on a Memorial Day. Picture this, Memorial Day, a veteran on Memorial Day, just finished playing golf with my family. Again, my girlfriend at the time. We're enjoying a lovely Dairy Queen. You know, for those of you who like the Texas stops on Dairy Queen, Heath Bar Blizzard, no chocolate syrup. That's what I'm having. On Memorial Day at 2 o'clock, I get a phone call from my boss, right? And he said, hey, you know, tomorrow I need you to meet me at the New Orleans airport. Instead of coming back to Dallas, I need to meet you at the airport. Now, legend had it back in the GE days, not even legend, it did happen to a buddy of mine, that if they called you to go to the airport, that means you were getting fired. And the idea, you know, like, well, why don't you go to the airport? Well, pre-9/11, you know, you would have to go through security, right? And there would be a meeting room in like the, you know, American Airport Lounge or something like that, or American Express Lounge. And so then there you got, you went through security, you're in a meeting room, and, you know, they're not going to freak out on you Jerry Maguire style and pull a gun or something like that. And so it's really a cheap and tacky way back in the day for companies to fire people. And so here again, when he called me at Dairy Queen saying, meet me at the airport, I in essence knew I was being fired, which I told him. I said, are you guys firing me? He goes, well, I don't like that word. I'm like, well, what word do you want to use? Laid off. I mean, it was, you know, laid off for being fired. You ain't paying me anymore, and I'm not working there anymore. So what does it matter? So there's never a good time to fire somebody, but there sure is heck better time to do it than firing a veteran on Memorial Day at Dairy Queen. So I remember at that moment, I said, you know what? One day I'm gonna, you know, enough of this, enough of inept people being in charge. One day I'm gonna start my own company. And so that's what I've done. And then for those of you out there who experience those things, if you work hard and you love what you do, then there's a chance you need to be your own boss. But if you're the type of individual who's like, hey, I just want to get by with the bare minimum, and I don't really like what I do, and I don't know if there's anything I would like doing, I'm gonna say entrepreneurship probably not for you. But again, the pro is you can't be fired. You cannot fire yourself. Now, you can have clients fire you, you know, and no matter what type of business you're in, you will have a client if you own your own business. They can fire you. That's not fun. But if they fire you, guess what? Your life doesn't stop. You pick yourself up and you keep doing the same job you were doing 2 minutes before that client fired you. Why? Go get another client. Learn from it. Go get another client. And that's all you got to do. You keep rocking. Whereas if you're working for somebody else, now you got to go try and get another job. Maybe you're probably not getting paid anymore, right? They may give you 2 weeks severance, they may give you 2 months, but it's going to run out. There's going to be a huge stress level, right? I've been there, done that. It is not fun being fired. It's not fun quitting. I've done both, right? It is not fun. There's a stressor there. But when you're your own boss, you won't have that stress. There'll be other stresses for sure, but not like that. Not that, oh, duty, what am I going to do for a living now? Oh, poo, what am I going to tell my wife and kids? You won't have that anymore, right? Unless you only have like one client when you do your job. And in that case, you're probably not that great of a business person. Let's get back into it then. Another pro, you can grow the business the way you want to, right? If you want to change, remember that discussions you in your head that you have? Well, if I was running things, I would do it this way. And whether your way is right or wrong, at least you're doing it your way, right? Like that Elvis Presley song, I Did It My Way. That's you all day long, baby. Do it your way. Now, the downside is you're doing it your way. If your way is wrong, hard to come back from that. Not a lot of people are going to tell you, hey, that's wrong. But you know what? That's a risk a lot of people are willing to take. And it's one I'm willing to take. So I like that. Do things your own way. And then we get into the basic fundamental human nature of things. You know, people usually work for two reasons, prestige and power. And with being your own boss, you certainly have the prestige for yourself anyway, and you'll build that over time with the client base. And then power, you won't have a lot to begin with, obviously, because you're just starting off. But eventually, power will come into play as you make more money, as you make your name for yourself in the marketplace, as you come into your own and you outperform your competitors. That's where the power comes in. So being your own boss, being an entrepreneur, entrepreneurship allows you to have that power and prestige on a basis level that right now, if you're working at, you know, McDonald's on the line worker or working on the line at GM, you may not feel as much power and prestige as you would like. So being your own boss certainly helps you with that. And then honestly, guys and girls, let's get into it. Money. money. I mean, nobody works to be broke, right? There are a few of you out there wanting to be pro bono. I applaud that. But for the majority of people, right, it's money. It's that's why you're in business. And so, you know, a lot of people have this, you'll see these things for franchises, starting your own business. I would argue being a franchise, probably not being your own boss. It's close. It's close and not a bad way to go. There's kind of a prepackaged way to set up things. But in the end, let's take Chick-fil-A, for instance. If you want to go be a Chick-fil-A owner of a restaurant, first of all, you got to have $1 million seed money. Last time I looked, it may be $2 million now. But you got to drop down Chick-fil-A $2 million. And guess what you don't get to do? You don't get to do it your way. You do it the Chick-fil-A way. So for some of you, that may be a good thing. You may not want to try and reinvent the wheel, but you don't really want to have a boss other than maybe corporate. Franchise is not a bad way to go. But the point I'm trying to make is there's always limits to how much money you can make in everything. I know even in my job, they will say in this type of career, oh, unlimited income potential. There's always a limit, and the limit is based comes down to your time, the amount of people you have. I would argue that even Walmart and Amazon have an income limit. It's way up there. I mean, there are limits in the billions, but it's limited to how many people they have, how many operations, facilities they have, how much product they can push at one time. And that's what you see companies do. They're always pushing that envelope. So I would say be cautious when someone tells you, oh, you got unlimited earning potential. Yeah, in theory, but in reality, no. But my point, coming back to the pro of being your own boss, is you can name what that income potential is, and then it's just working towards that. Whether you want to do that in a franchise, in a preset way of doing things, whether you want to try and reinvent the wheel yourself, you can name your own dollar amount that you're shooting for and then work towards that. I mean, compare that to a regular job. Let's say you're an engineer out there, and you went to the Harvard of the South, again, Mississippi State University Engineering School, and you got the best engineering degree in the country, again, from Mississippi State University. And you're out there killing it right out of college, making 100, 120 grand as an engineer. And you develop some new engineering tweak or way of doing things, right? And it revolutionized what little part of the world you're in. Guess what you're going to make next year? $120,000. Right, they may give you a 5% raise. They may give you a little bonus, but you're not going to capitalize on the invention you did or the tweak that you did to the tunes of hundreds of thousands of dollars, or millions of dollars, or turning that into your own business. Now, conversely, if you're your own boss and you do something similar, now you've just opened up that income potential. So again, making more money is the name of the game, and being your own boss is a way to do that. So those are the pros. So let's look at the cons, right? The cons, right? Number one, it's all you, baby. All you. That means rise or fall, it's on you. If you fail, you can't blame your boss. Why? Because you're the boss. You can't blame your employees. Why? You're the boss. You should have changed things. You can't blame your clients. Why? Clients are always right. And I know there's threads out there that go, oh, the client's not always right. Yeah, I mean, aside from a few dummies out there, for the most part, client customers are always right. And if your business isn't doing anything, guess what? You're wrong. So the con of being your own boss is you got nowhere to turn, no one to blame but yourself. So you really got to step up your game and make sure you're all in, right? You've got to be all in 24/7 in the beginning. Not a lot of breaks you can take, which is another downturn. You're not going to have a lot of vacation time. You're not going to have a lot of time with your family. So for those of you who are out there, you're going, and I've seen it. I've seen the boomers when they want to make this lifetime change at the end in their 60s and maybe go do arts and crafts or whatever side business they wanted to do and quit their normal job. And in essence, they don't understand that they're starting all over again. And so they've worked 30 years and they want to retire, and they think that doing their own business is going to be this simple, hey, I make it, I build it, they will come type of mentality. And it doesn't work that way. In essence, they're starting over at 60. So for you people out there who are kicking this around, I would say, when do you think you're going to have more energy to start your own business? In your 20s and 30s and 40s or in your 60s and 70s? Statistically speaking, I'm telling you, you're not going to want to start over in your 60s and 70s. And then for those of you who are in industries that have high turnover rates and you get that dreaded phone call and you haven't gotten it yet and you may sit there thinking, oh, I'm awesome, it's never going to happen to me. I'm telling you, it's going to happen to you, right? Are you going to want to get that phone call in your late 40s and 50s and be forced to look at something like self-retirement? Be forced to look at, you know, draining your 401k savings to start up a business? Probably not. But the con, again, is you are the person. The buck stops with you. And not a lot of people are comfortable with that. Tell you another high, another con is high failure rate. What's that mean? 88% of businesses that startup businesses, you know, self-employed, 88% fail. That's 88%. That is, for those of you who don't understand percentages, that's like 10 people in a room, 9 fail, only 1 succeeds. 1 out of 10 succeed. And success is measured in many different ways. And how we measure the success is they're able to sustain that business. That doesn't even mean making a lot of money. That doesn't mean they're killing it and kicking it with Barack Obama and Elon Musk at climate changing events. It means they're getting by. That includes that person. So high failure rate. Why is it? Well, they probably didn't realize how much work it was. And we kind of went over that. In the beginning, it is a lot of work. You can kind of forget about weekends. If you're starting your own business and you've got weekends off and you're clocking in at 9, taking a 2-hour lunch and clocking out at 5, I promise you, I would bet that you're probably not going to be successful. I know there's this one restaurant she opened up down the street from us, and she was a career changer, and it was a pretzel shop. And every time we go in there, the workers didn't know what was happening. She, the owner, was never there. The hours were the weirdest hours of all, something like, from 10 to 4. And I remember they were shut down on Friday evenings, and they're next to other restaurants. They had a great location, but they're shut down. They locked the doors at 5. I remember my father reached for the door handle at 5 o'clock in the afternoon to open it up, and they locked the door before he could pull it open. Before he could pull it open. Right? I said, I don't think this place is going to be around long. They lasted, I think, 4 months and were shut down. Why? Because that owner was not involved, did not want to bread pretzels, didn't want to be there early and stay late, didn't want to stay open when, guess what, when people want a pretzel during normal pretzel-eating hours, right? I don't know about you, but I'm probably not going to want a pretzel from 2 to 4 and go make a special trip to go get that pretzel. That's just an example, right? So you got to work hard and work long. And once you're successful, once you've made it, then you can start delegating. I've heard that a number of times. Oh, I want to start my own business. I'm going to delegate it. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. I had a meeting with a kid one time. He was at UNT, University of North Texas, about to graduate, called me for some financial advice, or so I thought. And quickly I realized this kid is trying to vet me to come on board for a company he doesn't even have yet. He's asking me all these questions, trying to put, you know, get me to put in my stake into an online shoe retailer. And this is years ago. I'm not saying he had a bad idea, but he had no startup capital. He's living with his parents, hasn't graduated college, has no product. All he has is a concept, right? And he's trying to put the cart before the horse and trying to put a team together before he's done anything. I said, okay, you know what? And just to, you know, try and not really make a point with him, but just try and vet the guy a little bit and try and give him food for thought. I said, you know what? I'm going to need $100 for you. If you want my services, now that's very cheap, honestly, for a great person such as myself. You know, let's throw a number out there. You know, can you give me $100 and I'll put something together for you? You know what his response to me was? I'll have to go ask my dad. I'm like, what? Ask your dad? Are you kidding me? You're trying to put a business together and you don't even have $100? Right? So for those of you out there who have this misconception of, oh, I'm just going to start a business, if you're living with your parents, I'm not downing you for that, but you got to work. You know, if you're still asking your parents for money, probably not a good sign. You're probably not ready yet. So anyway, that's another reason. People don't have enough startup money to begin a business. You want to make sure you have enough money to last you 2, 3, 4 months while you don't have any clients. Also, you know, they probably don't do their due diligence, what's called a SWOT analysis. You don't know what the strengths, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, what the opportunities out there for you, and what are the threats. By threats, I mean, what's the competition? And just because there's a lot of competition doesn't mean you can't do it. Honestly, the more competition out there, the better. That means that's a successful industry, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You just got to find your place in there and do it better than everybody else. But a lot of times people don't do that, and that's kind of another reason they fail. And in here, I'm just going to say it. Not everybody can be a social influencer. Man, I get it, right? Every generation has their thing. I think this generation's thing is social influencer. I'm just going to show a picture of myself and look pretty or do something silly and get enough followers and people and advertisement money will follow. Yes, that happens for a few, but it's like being a professional sports person for the very, very few. I would say maybe the 1% out there that that's successful for. So I'm not being a dream killer, but you know, just be realistic about that. And again, I promise you, if I interviewed a social influencer, they would tell you it is work. Matter of fact, I was speaking to one the other day, and I said, man, you going on all these great vacations and stuff? He goes, yeah, but and I'm not enjoying it. You know, I'm always having to post a picture, a video, take video, re-edit. It's really not as fun as you would think. So just be careful about that when you're thinking about starting a business. Let's look at what a side hustle is versus entrepreneurship, right? Entrepreneurship, again, is, hey, I'm going to start my own thing. I'm going to do it. A side hustle is, hey, I like the job I have, and I'm going to do this little thing on the side to make some extra money. Now, a side hustle can turn into it can turn into a full-time entrepreneurship, but a side hustle is a great way to put your toe in the water and see if that's something you really want to do, right? Because a lot of the same principles that hold true for sole entrepreneurship, sole self-employment, hold true for a side hustle. I would say the main difference is with a side hustle that doesn't work, you have your real job, so to speak, to fall back on. You also have your real job to help prop up your side hustle so you're not out there just trying to knuckle and grind it and have that stress of, oh, if my side hustle doesn't work, how am I going to eat? Your real job takes care of that. The challenge you have, though, is not letting one interfere with the other. You definitely want to devote enough time to your side hustle to make it effective, but you don't want to devote too much time to where your real job suffers, and guess what happens? You get that dreaded phone call like, hey, this isn't working out for us anymore, right? You want to try and keep your real job for as long as possible. So that's what a side hustle is. Again, entrepreneurship is full-time. The side hustle is something you do part-time, right? That's the key differentiator. Usually it's something already established, you know, like food delivery, maybe some social media stuff, maybe some, consulting, some type of consulting, maybe some, you know, landscaping, painting. You could even argue that maybe handyman work on the side would be something to do as a side hustle while you do your real job, things like that. You know, for those entertainers out there, again, I said social influencer, but there's a ton of people out there doing stuff like magic shows, rapping, DJing, and you know, just realize that you're probably not going to be at the Kennedy Center, or you're not going to rent out Madison Square Garden year one when you start, but there's a lot of opportunities for that type of entertainment to be a DJ at a wedding or a bar mitzvah or something like that here in Dallas, for sure. Those types of things, and do your regular job. I could tell you, you know, in the Army, I saw that. There were guys when we were in Bosnia, side hustles all over the place. You watch any, you know, one of these Army movies, you'll see guys selling cigarettes, and in our case, it was CDs. Back in the 90s, they'd sell CDs on the side because they didn't have a PX on base when you're in country. So in the beginning, they kind of get some contraband, so to speak, and then delve it out on a black market, you know, crap game style for those of you who like Kelly's Heroes, that type of thing, those side hustles. A bad one that comes to mind is I remember after the fact I found this out. It turns out when we're in Bosnia at the camp we were at, turns out the military police, right, they were running a side hustle. And you'll never believe it, but the side hustle they were running was prostitution. Yeah, it's funny, but not funny, right? So they were running a prostitution rink out of camp because, again, you're deployed, certain rules involved. You're not out there, you know, intermingling with the populace, so to speak. So there's a lot of pent-up frustration, guys. So obviously there was a demand for it. And what's sad is the person who ran the MPs was a female first lieutenant, and she was running a prostitution ring out of camp. So there's an idea of a side hustle and a real job. Now, of course, it came to light, and you know, they got in trouble, to say the least. But there's an example of side hustle. I had platoon members, it turns out their side hustle was selling drugs, right? I'm not recommending starting a prostitution ring or selling drugs. I'm just saying where there's a will, there's a way. There's a way you can do your real job, whatever that is, and start a side hustle however you want. So I would explore that. So now let's look at a little bit of data, right? So how many small businesses are there in the United States of America? Right now, it looks to be around 32 million, 31.7 million if you want. 31.7 million small businesses in the United States. And a small business, unfortunately, is defined as anything under $20 million. So, I mean, it's still for a lot of you, it's like, well, I don't have $20 million. I can't start a small business. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it incorporates everybody from my 7-year-old daughter's going out there and starting an LLC, doing a lemonade stand out on the corner, all the way up to $20 million. So that number is 31.7 million out there. In the world, if you look at the world, there's 213 million small businesses. So that means in the United States, we make up 15% of the small businesses in the United States. And I will say this as another pro for owning your own business. There's a lot of tax breaks for you. America is a champion of freedom, is a champion of the small business, more so than any other country. I mean, yeah, we've got our problems. But in terms of launching your business, there's no better place than the United States of America. I would argue there's no better place than Texas to do that. No state income tax, right? In Texas, there's a lot of tax credits available to you to start your own business. You're set up more for success here in Dallas, Texas, than a lot of other places in the world, a lot of other places in the United States. So think about that. Out of that, think of how many failed. So if there are 31 million successful small businesses in the United States, think of how many millions have failed. Again, we go back to that failure rate we talked about. 9 out of 10 are going to fail. So that's some data for you to think about. Again, 20% of the new businesses fail within the first year. So that means in America, about 6 million businesses fail every year. 30% fail in year two. So that means 10 million, right, fail, right, out of those that started. And then if you go to year five, half of those businesses that started have failed. So like I said earlier, 90% of startups fail, and they usually fall between year two and five. Why? Year one, you probably got enough money. You probably haven't realized you failed yet at month six, and it's just a matter of time before you close the doors. I'll say another one, restaurants are very popular. Everybody wants to start a restaurant. If you're a great cook, that's only half of it. You got to be a great business person as well. And they have the highest failure rate restaurants do because they're very expensive to start and they're very expensive to maintain. It's just tough. Clubs are another one. I tell you, I mean, kind of a funny story. I remember I was driving with this guy. He was a rep for a company. And he starts talking about his marriages, this wife, then that wife, then this wife, and then that wife. And after a while, I started doing the math. I'm like, hey, man, how many times have you been married? He was only in his mid-40s. He looks at me, he goes, 7. I said, 7 times? And I made a joke. Typically, I make jokes when I probably shouldn't, right? So I joked. I said, so what did you do, marry a bunch of strippers? Joking. He looks at me dead serious and goes, yeah. I'm like, well, how does that work? He goes, well, you know, when I turned 40, I had a midlife crisis. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not happy about it, but I left my wife and kids, bought a red Corvette. Me and my buddy, we started a strip club outside of Houston. And so here again, here's that dream, right? I'm going to be the dream. I'm not arguing for this dream, ladies and gentlemen. I'm merely giving you an example. Yours could be hopefully something a little bit more better for the world. But he and his buddy went and started a gentleman's establishment outside of Houston. I said, well, how did it go? Oh, he goes, oh, it was great for the first year. I was stoned and drunk out of my mind. Every night we had champagne in the champagne room. Every night we had cocaine. We had as many girls as we wanted. Obviously, weddings didn't work out. The marriages didn't work out. But after a year, we were broke. Why? Because they didn't work. They did not work. So I use that extreme example because, one, it's real. Two, it's one that a lot of guys have that fantasy. And whatever your fantasy is, just realize, and hopefully it's a better fantasy, but even that fantasy is going to require work, or you're gonna fail. Another reason employees are expensive. I'll give you some numbers there. On average, an employee costs $60,000. Why is that? It's not that you're paying $60,000, but you got to pay for things like training. You got to pay things like recruiting, interviewing, hiring. Another number says an average employee costs $150,000. So it really depends on what study you look at. but we'll use 60,000 for you lower end people. So if you start your own business, chances are you're going to have to do everything yourself for a while. And then you're going to want to hire people. Just realize when you hire people, you got things like taxes you're going to have to pay, payroll taxes you're going to have to pay. Forget about benefits. You know, if you want to attract and retain employees, you're going to have to do for them what you want your current boss to do for you. You're going to want things like medical, dental, vision, life insurance, 401k, profit sharing. Eventually, for your business to be successful and grow, right, you're going to have to do those things. I'm not saying every business has to do that. You know, a real estate agent is a great example of a self-employed person who probably doesn't have to go that route. They could probably be self-employed as a one-man shop or one-woman shop the whole time. But you want to look at that and remember that you're going to have expenses. And I want to kind of wrap up here and talk about another big killer is taxes. Taxes, taxes, taxes. You're going to have to pay taxes. Now, when you're employed, guess what happens? It, for most of you, just have it automatically taken out of your paycheck. So, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you don't know. You put down zero or one or two. They withhold 10, 20, usually 30% of your salary, and you wind up getting a rebate. And I remember everybody getting happy. Oh, I got a big rebate at the end of the year. I got $5,000 or $10,000. All that means is that you failed. And you're like, what? I mean, you failed. That means you gave the government your money. They didn't need all of it, and they gave it back. So instead of you investing that money throughout the entire year, you just gave it to Uncle Sam, and he did what he wanted it to. And like a true pimp that Uncle Sam is, he gave you a little bit back. He gave you your own money back, and you were happy to get it. So that aside, right, when you're self-employed, you no longer have that. You have to pay your taxes. You have to make that step. And a lot of people forget that. They forget to set aside enough money. And what I would tell you would be a good rule of thumb would be 20%. So if someone gives you 100, take 20 and put it in the bank and save that for taxes. And you need to pay your taxes probably quarterly. And I want to get into the whole thing, but just remember, you got to pay taxes when you're self-employed. I know this one guy, he was making developed his own software. He's making $500,000-$600,000 a year, maybe $800,000 a year. We went to Vegas. He's drinking $175 Cavassier stuff. It's just ridiculous what he's doing. And it turns out he got in trouble with the IRS. They seized his accounts because he didn't pay his taxes for 3 years. Now, this guy's so cocky and sure of himself. He's like, well, I'll pay it back, right? Because he made so much money. I think he owed around $1 million or $2 million by the time taxes and penalties accrued. And within a year or two, he paid it off. I'm telling you, you don't want to do that because, you know, the risk he's taking is that, one, he's going to be able to continue to do what he's doing, and he's not going to get hurt. Someone's always going to want his services. So I don't really recommend that. I don't recommend you mess around with the tax man, right? That's how they got Al Capone, okay? You can get away with a lot of stuff in America, but I promise you what you cannot get away with is not paying your taxes. I don't care who you are. So please, if you're going into your own business, even on your side hustle, especially on your side hustle, remember you owe taxes on that money. Uncle Sam will find out. And for you that's sitting there right now going, he ain't going to find out. There's no way he's going to find out. He's finding out right now. He's coming for you. Okay, so please put money aside from taxes. So again, wrapping up, I would say side hustle versus entrepreneurship. If you want to start out slow, just put your toe in the water and start off with side hustle. Find something you like doing. It'll be easier for you to keep doing it. And for those of you who are questioning about whether it's for you or not, I like to make this quote here. You can't win if you don't play. You know who said that? Every losing lottery winner in America. But for you guys, hopefully it's better, right? I'm telling you, if you even have a little bit of spark in you, please go try. Please give yourself a shot. Please believe in yourself. You can do it. Please take what I've given you here and go forth and do great things with it. Until next time, it's Dr. Wheeler Pulliam saying take care. Hey, make sure you tune in next week. If you like this week's about entrepreneurship and a side hustle, it's going to be nice. We're going to bleed right into how do you save your money now as a self-employed person. Can't wait to talk to you guys then.